Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program Matt Castle, who is Director of Air Freight Services at C.H. Robinson. And today we're going to talk about Listen to El Nino, Why Developing a Flexible Supply Chain Matters. Now, El Nino has been in the news for the past few months, and even more recently, we saw the storm Jonas get kind of impacted us here on the East Coast. So a lot of disruptions over the past few weeks and months, weather related, but of course there's all different types of events that can trigger supply chain disruptions. And one of the things you always hear is about, you know, the importance of having a flexible supply chain in order to respond to these types of disruptions in a quick and minimal impact kind of way. But, you know, what exactly does that mean, and kind of what kind of impacts do these disruptions have on supply chain, so on and so forth? And that's really going to be at the heart of what we're going to discuss here with Matt, and certainly a privilege to have him on the program to kind of share his insights and advice on this topic. I just want to remind those of you that are joining us live today that, you know, part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you do have a question for Matt, you can do so via the submit a question button or via the chat feature. And I'll keep an eye on it. And certainly if it's a good and appropriate question and, you know, we've got time, I'll, you know, try to weave it into the conversation. And finally, if you are joining us as a visitor, you do have to sign in first in order to be able to ask a question. So with that, Matt, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Adrian. Glad to be here today.
Well, Matt, like I always do whenever we bring a new guest onto the program for the first time, I'm always interested in learning a little bit about their background and, you know, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics. So why don't we start there? You know, very briefly, just tell us a little bit about your career path, you know, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics and what your current role and responsibilities are there at C.H. Robinson.
Yeah, so I graduated from the University of North Dakota about 20 years ago with degrees in aviation and management. Originally had the intention of being a pilot, but decided otherwise. So as I started a bit of my research around other aviation-related careers, it led me to Robinson Global Forwarding Division in 1996. I started really at an operations desk, moved into sales, and ultimately took over as general manager for a Minneapolis international office. Ended up in Los Angeles for 5-6 years as a general manager on the West Coast, and ultimately into my current role as the Director of Air Services. In my current role, I've got accountability to our global air freight strategy, which includes carrier management and our gateway operations. So, you know, I think, you know, from a supply chain logistics perspective, I think, you know, my draw or what hooked me, you know, 20 years ago was this global platform in which we got to see the world. And I think more importantly, I think a lot of the relationships that have been built over that time have been fantastic.
No, great, great career path there. And you know, certainly 20 years, you know, in the industry, a lot has changed over the past 20 years, I'm sure. And yeah, you've had a front seat, you know, to that. And obviously, as we look ahead here, you know, all we can see is ongoing change and opportunities, you know, as well. So, So thanks for sharing that. So, you know, like I mentioned in my opening comments, you know, we have, you know, El Nino, out on the West Coast, right? That's causing flooding and mudslides and other, you know, kind of disruptions. And then, you know, just, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, we had, you know, winter storm, Jonas on the East Coast, you know, dropping, you know, 2 to 3 feet of snow, in places like New York and Philadelphia and DC. You know, how do these events and many others like them, you know, how do they impact, you know, supply chain operations? And do they impact just, you know, companies that live in these specific areas, or does it have a ripple effect across, you know, companies and across other parts of the country and other parts of the world?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Adrian, you know, any unexpected event can have a pretty drastic effect on one's supply chain and really subsequent inventory levels. You know, whether you're a manufacturer, whether you're delivering durable goods or what have you. You know, while a lot of times these events are pretty isolated and in many cases short-lived, it really does have a long-standing effect before carriers get back into that rhythm, and I think before you see a lot of supply chain recovery take place. I think it's kind of the gist of the blog that we had put out was, I think just creating awareness and getting out there to take some time to actually plan and think about how you would react to some of these events.
Well, that's a great that's a great point, because I mean, I think a lot of times a lot of companies tend to be reactive, right? You know, whether it's a weather event or whether it's some non-natural event, like a port strike. Actually, we saw that with the West Coast ports not too long ago, right? Or a labor strike, or even God forbid, another terrorist attack somewhere. All these things have the potential to disrupt supply chains. And I think the ideal is to move away from kind of this reactive type of mode. I'm sure when these, when El Nino events or even with the winter storm, I'm sure your phones and emails went off the hook with customers and carriers, kind of in reactive mode, trying to figure out what to do. So what you hear basically is, the need to, be more flexible, right? Develop a more flexible supply chain and to be better prepared for these types of events. But what exactly, does that mean, from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, of course, for every organization, that's going to have a little bit different meaning to it. But I think at the highest level, when you think about flexibility within your supply chain, it's ease of access or accessibility to alternate modes of transportation. So if you're a heavy ocean freight, mover, do you have air freight relationships and contacts? Making sure that you've got visibility or line of sight to really all of those options or the full portfolio of services that exist out there, whether it's speeding up, slowing down, or changing port locations.
Now, I would think that there's kind of a balance between kind of things that you can do upfront from a long-term planning perspective to create that flexibility, and then there are things that obviously are more short-term in nature, that it's, hey, a storm's coming next week, and now you have to, you've got some pre, so there's time horizons there. What's are some of the things that you see some companies or some of your clients doing, maybe from a long-term perspective to prepare, and then what are some things that companies do perhaps on a shorter term to kind of pre-position or divert freight or things like that more in the short term?
Yeah, I think the first step that that companies continually look for and I think is really, to me, the first line of defense is simply having supply chain visibility to your existing product that's in motion. And I think we see a lot of organizations that tend to have very good systems, very good visibility to productions, to work in progress. But once it leaves a particular factory or is in motion, that continues to be a bit of a problem. And I think that's, one area where, I think it's very important to get out in front of and make sure that you do have as best as you can real-time visibility to your product and your inventory that's in motion. Because a lot of times that's your, whether it's diversion, whether it's looking at alternatives, but that in many instances is your best bet to get product or inventory where you need it to go. Simply having more product manufactured is not always the case, and has typically can have a long wait time on it.
Visibility, absolutely. I think that's the one constant thing that I hear from supply chain executives all the time. That's kind of the foundation, if you will, for all of this that we talk about, right? And whether it's from a risk mitigation standpoint or just to be more, responsive to customer demand, so on and so forth. I mean, I know when the West Coast ports issue was happening, I know that led some shippers, and I know you've actually, C.H. Robinson, produced some research in this area. We actually had an episode last year around, shippers diverting freight from the West Coast to the East Coast, right, and kind of changing their or kind of looking at their network design from a longer term perspective to kind of in risk management mitigation perspective to do some of that. I think from the other visibility piece that I see is not so much visibility or in addition to visibility to the shipments and what's happening, but it's also visibility to, the potential disruptive events, right? So
Correct.
the simplest thing is obviously watching the weather channel, right? And understanding what the weather what's happening on the weather front, not only here, but perhaps where your suppliers are located and things like that, and being able to feed that information into your system so you have that external sources of data of whether it's weather, whether it's potential labor strikes, so kind of looking at news items and things like that, and even social media and looking at social media streams. I mean, do you see that happening as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think in our global environment today and how trade has evolved, I think staying connected to those regions or those parts of the world where you are manufacturing or producing product is absolutely critical. And I think, outside of getting information from your service providers or carriers, there's a lot of great, media and industry sites that stay very current with what's happening in a lot of those marketplaces. The other thing that I would really highlight is, I think it's really important to make sure that you understand your underlying carrier's geographical structure, right? How many times have you showed up at the airport and it's a beautiful sunny day, only to find out that your flight's been canceled or delayed? And it's because that airline or that carrier was hubbing out of a particular location that got hit by a thunderstorm and it shut the airport down. So, I think those are some of the other things to really stay connected to where, you may not even be thinking of, if you're shipping from Europe, wow, what's happening in Amsterdam if you're using KLM as a particular carrier? And maybe the airline was shut down, but you're actually shipping out of Poland. As an example. And so those are some of the other things that, I encourage people not only just to be focused on the areas where they are manufacturing, producing, but also understanding, that geographical structure of where their carriers are residing or where they maybe hub from, if you will.
That's great. I never really thought of it from that perspective. I mean, certainly, the advice I give to a lot of, shippers is that they need to have, when we talking about visibility, they need to have that multi-tier visibility. So not just to their own operations, obviously, or even just their tier one suppliers, but they really need to have, visibility all the way, as deep as they can go, tier two, tier three, tier four, right? To truly, because all those things have a ripple effect on what can cause a disruption. But I never really thought about it from the standpoint of really understanding, the carrier's network and how, and the multiple tiers there and the interrelationship between, different airports in the case of air, like you just brought up. So I think that's a great, some great advice there, because that obviously also has an impact having visibility, to that as well. And I think, all of this, as I think about this, really falls under the umbrella and why there's so much buzz around this control tower, concept. These days. I mean, are you seeing kind of as a way to create a more flexible supply chain, companies moving toward this kind of control tower type of environment?
I don't know. I think that's definitely is a buzzword that's out there, and I think a lot of what it leads back to again is I think companies' pursuit to simply figure out the best platform for visibility, whether that's leveraging their own existing technology or in-house system, and the carriers or logistics providers are feeding into that. Whether it's leveraging a service provider system and their visibility offerings that they have, I think it gets down to that root of again simply supply chain visibility, and again, the more real time, the more connected that you can get to that, the better decision making that you're able to make at any point in that supply chain. We definitely see organizations becoming much more deductive in how they're approaching their supply chain from that perspective, whether that's, through contingency planning. I think we touched on it here a little bit, but, we see a lot of customers who, will purposely look to identify with a multitude of carriers. And again, like they, for us as a third party freight forwarder, they really want to understand those underlying carriers that we are supporting. And they'll look at that as a mechanism to defer, or again, to hopefully balance out a little bit of the risk that exists within their supply chain. But in doing that, kind of to your original question around the control tower, it is this very deductive thinking and kind of process that we see customers going through that really starts from the top. So it can't be a lot of decentralized decision making. It has to be very well thought out, very well planned, and there has to be, again, where we see there being success, there's a little bit of rhythm that exists in how they're approaching it.
Great. And I think that leads to my next question, which, you already, I think it gave some examples, but, it's one thing to have, greater visibility, right? And it's another thing, greater visibility of potential disruption, but it's another thing to actually know what to do about it, right? So what actions should companies, take today or when they see a potential, disruptive event developing, let's say like a storm, in order to minimize or eliminate the impact of a disruption?
Yeah, I think, again, as we've kind of circled around here, I think every customer has a different threshold for the amount of flexibility that they need to weave. And in some instances, there isn't a lot of flexibility, whether it's a particular region of the world that you're moving product in and out of. But I think there's a lot of really simple things that or questions that you can ask yourself as a shipper or as a customer here. I think, again, we've talked at length here around visibility to your inventory. I think the others that sit out there, again, making sure that you are taking time out to build those appropriate relationships across all of the modes. So, again, if you're a heavy ocean shipper, make sure you stay connected to your air freight provider if it's someone else. Make sure you keep your pricing up to date. Make sure you understand the routing of what that's going to look like, or even the timing, the transit times that would exist if you do go that particular option. Even in an ocean environment with what we've experienced here on the West Coast, if you look at alternatives that are out there, whether that's, looking at Seattle. So maybe it's making sure you understand what carriers support the Port of Seattle, and maybe it's even taking it so far as to make sure you have your rates with your providers filed for Seattle with the FMC, so that you're taking that next step to ensure that if you need to make a shift very quickly, that you're not going to lose time by, oh, hold on, I've got to file for this, or I've got to take, these extra steps that could have been done ahead of time. And then, kind of in that theme around air and ocean carriers, but I think also being very connected to those providers at your first port of entry. So whether those are warehouses, you kind of led a little bit about some of the cross-dock and transloading facilities. Make sure you have those relationships. Make sure you understand who you would be turning to. Make sure you understand even what their mix of business is, so that you don't all of a sudden get to that point and everybody else is coming to them as well, and they're like, well, sorry, we'll get to you when we can because we've got another book of business that's over here. So make sure that you understand, where you sit within those relationships and that you have appropriate relationships from that perspective. And I would kind of continue that transload cross dock into making sure that you also stay connected to the inland or the domestic distribution component to it, right? So what if you have to do a makeshift transload and it's not going to go to your DC? Can you save some time by breaking that apart and doing a virtual distribution from your first port of entry? And do you have a provider who can support you, whether it's LTL or, again, a consolidation, domestic consolidation mode of traffic? So I think it's really, again, in a lot of that, it's just getting underneath it and understanding, who are those providers, who are my relationships, where do I go, should some of this stuff bubble up as it does, so that you're just not caught off guard.
Well, that's a great point about, relationships, because at the end of the day, even though analysts like me always like to talk about, the technology and like to talk about, business processes and, innovative business models. At the end of the day, logistics and supply chain is a people oriented business, right? And, really maintaining those relationships and establishing those relationships and setting up the groundwork, if you will, ahead of time, so that if you do have to, like you said, shift from one mode to another, or increase the use of another product, at least you've been maintaining communication with them, you understand the current business, so on and so forth, that, and you're not, like the joke when, someone wins the lottery and then someone, all these friends that you never knew had come calling, right? So yeah. It's the same type of thing you want to avoid here. It's, problem hits and now you've never called this other provider or this, carrier or this, other potential partner. And now because you need help, all of a sudden you expect them to help you. Meanwhile, you've never maintained that relationship or, an understanding of how you can work together. So I think that's great advice there. I just want to, kind of running short on time here. I've got a couple of more questions, but I just want to remind those of you that are joining us live that if you do have a question for Matt, now will be the time to, submit if you haven't already. You gave some good examples there. We've talked about visibility. I mean, how would you recommend or how can a company measure or assess, the flexibility of their supply chain? In other words, how do you know if your supply chain is flexible enough?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, as I alluded to earlier, I think every organization has a different opportunity cost of, that sits there within that equation. And I think it somewhat comes back to that very oversimplified question of what happens if I run out of inventory? What's that impact to my business? Whether it's lost customers, whether it's, loss of brand loyalty, does a production line go down? So I think it's understanding and answering that question to determine really how much flexibility that you need to weave into your supply chain. I see it a little bit as a balancing act of how far you want to take some of these steps to mitigate some of that risk. And, we see a lot of times customers that will simply diversify their supply chain and they'll use the port of LA and they'll use the port of Seattle together. And maybe the port of Seattle has a little bit higher cost in where they sit in their location, but again, they're hedging themselves a little bit in terms of whether there may be a disruption or some unexpected event that plays out. At least they know they'll have product that continues to move. I think the best way to obviously combat this, as we've talked about, is I do think it is taking time to sit down with your providers and carriers and simply talk through some of these things. Make sure that you understand the landscape and what would be your next immediate step that you would look to take in these situations.
Right. No, and just building off that last point there, I mean, obviously, and this has been shown by several, research reports that I've seen out there, where a lot of companies, when they talk about what's a risk mitigation strategy, number one or close to the top of the list is, to your point, really developing more collaborative relationships with their external trading partners, whether they're 3PLs or their suppliers, right? Is having these conversations up front and working jointly to kind of create this more flexible supply chain, right? So that, they've got a game plan going in, right? So from a 3PL perspective, I mean, how can, shippers work more collaboratively? What role can a logistics service provider play, to help companies become more flexible?
Yeah, I think, logistics providers at face value, right? I mean, we're in the business to have, multiple relationships with multiple carriers. I think we provide, in many instances, collectively across the board, we're providing a visibility platform. So I think there's a lot of those things inherently in what we do or how we position ourselves in the market that are really a derivative of providing flexibility to our customers. And again, our customers challenge us with a lot of these conversations and being able to be, not only reactive but proactive in how we try to build solutions within their supply chain that not only optimize it, but also minimize or mitigate some of the risk associated with it. Yeah, but with that, I think it also is important to make sure that you do understand the provider who you are working with, and what their full suite of services are and the capabilities that they have. And is that, is your provider that you're working with today, can they support you through those multiple modes of transportation? And if not, then you need to get out and make sure you're building those secondary relationships and such.
Yeah, no, good point. I mean, I've over the past couple of years, I've sort of been my conversations with logistics service providers or 3PLs kind of been advocating that they should really start promoting themselves as supply chain risk management partners, right? So there's always the perception or the way that a lot of shippers look at 3PLs as just being sources of transportation or warehousing services. But in reality, those service providers that take a more strategic approach and those shippers that want to view their logistics service provider from a more strategic perspective, really, from my perspective, 3PLs really can play the role of a supply chain risk management, partner for all the different reasons that we talked about, whether it's helping to provide that visibility, helping to provide that alternate sources of capacity, whatever the case that might be, or even just providing the human talent to help understand, how to deal with these disruptions. Matt, we're kind of short on time here, so I'm just going to go right to my last question here. Kind of as a way to wrap up. I mean, if you had to explain to the CEO or the CFO of a company, why supply chain flexibility matters. I mean, what would you say to them? I mean, what would be the case that you would put to them?
Yeah, it's Adrian, you kind of touched on it. It seems like a lot of times these questions never bubble up until you're in the thick of it. But I think there's, to me, at the heart of it comes back to that question that we put out there is, what happens if you run out of inventory? What is that aggregate impact to you as an organization? Again, whether that's production lines being down or product not being on the shelves, and what does that cost to you as an organization? And I think that to me is one of those things that leads itself back to the importance of what we're doing. I mean, as we know, transportation logistics, it's a cost that falls directly to the bottom line of everything that we do. So I think making sure that you have an action plan or have flexibility woven into what you're doing is absolutely critical. The other part that we didn't, maybe a little bit different shift, as you think of it from maybe a CFO or a CEO from a financial perspective here a bit, is there's also an opportunity there, right? I mean, as you have these events play themselves out, right, if you're the guy who's got product on the shelves when everybody else doesn't, you kind of corner the market a little bit, right? I'd love to be the shovel salesman up there in the Northeast here the last couple of weeks. I'm sure those have been flying off the shelves. And I think, again, making some of the simple preparations, as we've talked about, or taking some of those simple steps and building those the right relationships, I think really are and can be the difference of whether or not you're making your transportation budget and, more importantly, your organizational budget.
No, great points there. Certainly when you talk to CEO, CFO, being able to, put this in financial terms, right? In terms of being able to link this to items on the P&L or balance sheet, I think is always important. But I think you raise an important point too, a different perspective that in many ways, this is an opportunity, right? An opportunity to capture market share, an opportunity to increase customer loyalty, and sometimes it's difficult to put a number around that. But certainly if you can outperform the competition when these disruptions occur, that's got some real business value to them. And in this day and age, customer loyalty and taking market share away from the competition is very valuable. Matt, like I always say at the end of all our conversations, we always just manage to scratch the surface on these topics. But I think we've got a good conversation started. Hopefully, those of you listening to the program, whether live or on demand, I've got some ideas in getting the conversation started within your own companies in terms of the importance of developing a flexible supply chain. So, Matt, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Adrian. Appreciate it. Enjoyed it.
Great. I want to thank all of you who joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this episode on demand and you've got a question for Matt, you can find this episode on talkinglogistics.com and you can post a question or a comment there. And I'm sure Matt will be more than happy to respond via that medium. So again, thank you all for joining us today and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.